I didn't know what to talk about this evening, so I'm just going to talk about meditation because I love it. It saved my life, saved my bacon. It's transformed my life in many ways. It's brought spontaneity, happiness, contentment, confidence, joy in being. There are other things that it most certainly hasn't changed. My karmic blueprint for this lifetime, for the lessons I have to learn. I'm not going to tell you what they are. We've all got our own, but they're still there. But the difference is now that I see that it's all not me, not mine, not myself. It's all empty of any inherent reality. So it doesn't stop me from being happy. All this is to say that, as I've tried to express previously, if someone punches me in the face, it's still going to hurt, whether that's done actually or psychologically. However, one's ability to understand what's happened, to see it for what it is, to let go of it, to not seek reprisals, to not hold resentments, all of that has been brought through the practice of meditation, and it's brought a wonderful understanding of life. So, given that I didn't know what to talk about this evening, I'm just going to talk about meditation. I'm going to ramble a little bit, but hopefully there'll be bits and pieces that might be of help to you. There is no right time to start meditation. There is no right set of circumstances that you need in order to be able to begin a journey of meditation. It does need to be the appreciation that it really is a lifelong journey of learning and discovery. But you just start when the inkling takes you. And you think, oh, this might be a good idea. Why don't I see what happens if I sit down in a chair and close my eyes? What happens? The moment you choose to do that, you have started your journey of meditation. And if you're undertaking that journey of meditation within the training of the Noble Eightfold Path and the Buddha's teaching, then you have the most incredible resource to help you in that journey. But everyone's journey is different because we're all different, because our karmic blueprint is different for all of us. But there are certain things, certain qualities that are common to all of us because we're human beings. And so it is possible to gain instruction, to accept guidance, and that will help the journey of meditation tremendously. What is meditation? It is literally sitting quietly in a chair with your eyes closed. It's just simply, well, there are two main aspects to it, I'd say. I often talk about how it's about 90% being and about 10% doing. The percentages vary depending on who I'm talking to. But generally speaking, the point I'm trying to get across, that it's mostly about being. It's learning how to be. You'd be amazed at how few people understand how just to be and how it's 90% doing and 10% being, usually when they're asleep. It's an art, just learning how to sit still in a chair without wobbling physically and also wobbling mentally. We all know this because we all meditate. We all sit in a chair with our eyes closed. So meditation really, for me, has two components. One is learning how to sit quietly, at rest, at peace in the moment, which is the being part. And then the doing part is, well, then you can use the mind as a tool to then learn all kinds of things, to change your future, to develop transcendental wisdom, to develop your social skills. It's incredible the things that you can use the tool of the mind for once you've firstly established a degree of calm. So on the one hand, there's learning how to be calm, and then well, what can we do with that calm mind once we've established that calm and that level of control over it? So yes, so I would say meditation really is about learning. Yes, it's about enjoying the peace and tranquility of the moment. But in order to enjoy the peace and the tranquility of the moment, you have to learn. It's not a given. The mind's unruly. As I like to say, it's like a little puppy that's not been house trained yet, and it's just weeing wherever it wants to wee, and you have to, and you have to train the mind first to do what you wanted to do. And we all know this, because the moment we sit down with our eyes closed to meditate, we see that the mind goes off here, there, and everywhere. And so the journey has begun. There's no right time to start. There are no right set of conditions that have to be in place before you start meditating. You can choose to meditate whenever you want. In the Buddha's teaching, we have the Noble Eightfold Path, which can be distilled into three distinct trainings: training in ethics, training in mental development, and a training in wisdom. For me, meditation forms the fulcrum of that whole Noble Eightfold Path. In that, from the moment you begin to sit to meditate, you not only start to develop your mind. In order to develop mind, you start to develop wisdom, and you also start to develop your sila, your ethics. So an example for this would be, you find that whenever you sit down to meditate, you feel extraordinarily uneasy. There's this sense of guilt or panic about things said and things done. And it occurs to you some point that were you to be willing to keep the five Buddhist precepts, then perhaps sitting in meditation would be a lot easier. So, born of meditative experience arises wisdom. The wisdom in seeing the benefit in keeping the five Buddhist precepts. So somebody naturally, as a consequence of just sitting in meditation, starts to appreciate why the Buddha's teaching includes ethics. Ah, if I'm a little bit more careful in the way I interact with the world, and perhaps if I moderate the degree of selfishness with which I operate with the world, then perhaps as a consequence, when I sit down to meditate, I won't feel quite as bad. And this is how the journey of meditation works. And so you start to see how all the bits of the Buddha's teaching actually fit together, using meditation as the point, the fulcrum. So a meditator, based on their experience of what? Their experience of suffering in meditation, decides to change their behavior so that they suffer a little less when they meditate. Aha! It makes so much sense. The Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, starts to make so much more sense. There is suffering. When I act with selfishness, I experience the results of that in meditation as this agitation and this fear and this dread. If I keep the precepts, I don't experience those things when I meditate. That's the way it works. So the learning is immediate. So when we sit down to meditate, we find that the mind struggles to settle down. Or we find that the mind just disappears off for the duration of the meditation, and we're not even sure where it's been. But the bell goes, and we get up, and we go about our business, and we forget all about what happened in the meditation, until the next time we sit to meditate, and then the same thing happens. And then we sit again, and the same thing happens. And at some point, the wise reflection arises in the mind. Wait a minute. I spend my half an hour or my hour sitting in the chair, but my mind's all over the place. I don't like that. I wish I had more control over it. So, this is the point at which we start thinking about, am I approaching the meditation in the best way that I can? Is there a better way of approaching it? And we might decide at that point it would be a good idea to have a chat with the teacher, see what the teacher has to say. This is a really good habit to have, talking to a teacher regularly about meditation. We are creatures of habit. Habits do get established. We might think we're doing something in the right way, but if we don't go and check, we might be doing that in that way, in a wrong way, for a long time before we learn any different. So we go and have a chat with the teacher, and the teacher says something along the lines of, well, how are you setting it up? How are you setting up the meditation practice? And that's news to us, because we didn't know that you had to set up the meditation practice. You just went and sat. But no, it turns out that actually there's a lot you can do before you actually sit down to meditate, which is going to help. Developing mindfulness, developing mindful noting before you sit. Before I sit? Yes, before you sit. On your way to wherever you're going to sit to meditate, just start practicing mindfully noting sounds, sensations, thoughts, feelings, even before you've gone to sit. Before you close your eyes to meditate, just review what it is that you're going to do. What's the instruction? Okay, the instructions to rest content in the moment, watching things arise and noting them. Good. What happens if thoughts arise? Well, if thoughts arise, I get really angry and frustrated and annoyed and think that everything's gone wrong in the meditation. Stupid. And I'm stupid. No, says the teacher. If thoughts arise, then we accept them. We include them as part of the practice. Oh, right. Okay, so I don't need to get annoyed with them. No, you don't need to get annoyed with them. Thinking is normal. Just because we sat in a chair with our eyes closed, thinking doesn't suddenly become this weird enemy. Thinking's good for us. It separates us from the rest of the animal world. It allows us to do things like plan holidays. Thinking's good. Thinking is not the enemy. Thinking is never the enemy. Okay, so we're learning. We're learning all the time. What are we learning? We're learning about mind and matter. We're learning about the experience of being alive. We find it difficult to rest content in the moment because the mind is so changeable, so puppy-like, so interested in so many different things, so many thoughts, so many ideas about this and that. By not making thinking an enemy, by including thinking as part of the meditation, by willing to look at these thoughts as they arise, we start to get a better understanding of who we are and what our lives are all about. And we start to recognize that there are some thoughts which are really helpful, and then there are other thoughts which are really unhelpful. We start to see that there are some thoughts which are based in desperately wanting life to be different than it is. They're the ones that we don't like. And then there are thoughts occasionally that we do like, thoughts about how much we like somebody or how much we enjoy a certain thing. And they're not troubling thoughts at all. But these unwelcome thoughts, these troubling thoughts, seem to occupy our minds greatly in meditation. We never actually appreciated the degree to which we passionately desired life to be different than it is. We start to think that maybe this meditation is making us worse, not better. It's increasing the level of craving and wanting life to be different, not decreasing it. Some people come to meditation thinking that they don't suffer. But the more we meditate, the more we realize actually we do suffer. I've had meditators come to me and say exactly that. Paul, I think things are getting worse. I think the meditation is making me worse, not better. And my reply is always the same. Oh, good. I'm so pleased to hear it. Because what's happened is, it's not that all these bad thoughts have just started now. These difficult thoughts, these challenging thoughts, have been going on all that person's life. It's just now their mindfulness is sufficient to actually see what's been going on the whole time. And they start to recognize, actually, I've got quite a lot of sensual desire. I've got a lot of hatred. I've got a lot of greedy thoughts. I get very, very irritable. I'm full of doubts. I'm full of worries. Excellent. This is what we want. Sorry about that. But it is what we want. It is what we want, because it's through gradually sifting through and sorting through all these various desires, wants, not wants, things I miss, things I need, things I can't bear the thought of losing. Gradually sifting through it all, recognizing things for what they are, noting them, being with them, seeing their true nature. This is where the learning with meditation is. Gradually, as you sift through all this, the mind starts to calm down. At this stage, we're not solving the problem of craving. We're acknowledging it. We're seeing what happens when we crave. We see that when we crave for life to be different than it is, life seems like a real burden. It seems like everything's wrong. And the more we look at it, the more we see, well, if I just acknowledge what's going on, if I acknowledge this irritation, if I acknowledge this boredom, if I acknowledge this strong urge in the meditation to scratch my face, if I acknowledge it but without acting on that impulse, what happens? And the fear is that if I do nothing, it will swamp me, it will overtake me. But the reality is the other way around. By acknowledging it mindfully, by remaining with those unwanted thoughts and feelings, you see them for what they are, you see that they're transient, you develop wisdom into the transient nature of these thoughts and feelings, and you realize that you don't have to solve them. You just have to acknowledge them. Yes, there'll be strong urges to go down the route of sensual desire, or go down the route of worry, or go down the route of doubt. Whenever you become aware that the mind has run down those grooves, you acknowledge them and you linger with them. You allow those thoughts to play out. But you're watching. You're not resisting. You're not clinging. You're just watching. And over time, gradually, you learn all about these grooves of the mind, these habitual tendencies. You learn to acknowledge them, to accept them, see them for what they are, see the discomfort that comes with them, allow that discomfort to be there. All the time you're learning, you're learning, you're learning. And you become the master of your mind. As your mindfulness improves, as your concentration improves, you see the tendency of the mind to want to do sensual desire. You see the tendency of the mind to want to do irritation, or worry, or doubt. You see the tendency arise as like a doorway in the mind, and you can walk through that door if you wish and enter into that particular state of mind if you wish. But of course, the wisdom part of you goes, oh no, I've been down that route so many times. Do you know what? I'm getting a bit bored of it. And you choose not to go down that route. That's when we're getting to the stage of mastery over the mind. You're able to see where, from experience, where going down that particular route leads you. And it's always painful, it's never pleasant. And you decide, on this occasion, no, I'm gonna pass up on the opportunity. It takes time, it takes dedication, it takes willingness to speak regularly to a teacher, come on a retreat, attend the center regularly, meditate every day. But if you do those things, gradually you master the mind. And it's at the point when you are no longer afraid of hindrances, because they're no longer really hindering you. They're just things that are arising in the mind. They're no more important or substantial than the clouds passing in the sky. It's your resistance to them that gives them their importance. If you're not resisting them, then they're just ideas in the mind. Just arise and pass away. And so as you gain that control, and it's not the control of resistance, it's not the control of rejection, you're accepting those thoughts, you're allowing them to arise. Remember, with meditation, that we're not trying to get anywhere. We're already here. So it's just a question, just the case of allowing things to arise, being willing to allow things to arise and acknowledge what they are. Again, the fear is, and I've talked about this before, the fear is, well, if I'm just mindfully acknowledging thoughts that are arising, if I'm just mindfully acknowledging sounds and physical sensations and feelings of discomfort or whatever it is that arises, I'll never get properly concentrated. I'll never get calm. I'll never get really peaceful. And that's really what I want with meditation. But you will. Because what calm depends upon is an absence of resistance. It's just simply the absence of resistance. The problem is with meditation is that we micromanage. We're trying to micromanage contentment and tranquility. But if you know anyone who tries to micromanage anything like an office space, like everyone just gets more and more agitated. It's too much. What you have to do is allow for the fact that if there's no resistance and there's just the noting of what's unfolding in your experience, eventually that calm, that concentration, that equanimity will just naturally, spontaneously start getting stronger and stronger and stronger. You don't make it happen. You just create the supporting conditions for it to occur. So that means when we meditate, we have to have faith. We have to have faith that if I'm meditating for half an hour or an hour and I'm willing just to continue with this mindful noting of what's occurring, calm will come. Of course, we can use the breathing process as an anchor. Or if the breathing process is too subtle for you to distinguish, you can use the awareness of the body resting in the chair as an anchor point. But we're not focusing on it to make something happen. We're just focusing on the breath as an anchor point, knowing that from there the mind then naturally becomes interested in other things. Our mindfulness kicks in, we become aware of where the mind has gone. We note it and we bring the mind gently back. And it's having the faith that if I just follow that, eventually concentration, the equanimity, the tranquility will get stronger and stronger. And it does. I'm not saying it'll get stronger in the next half hour, but over time, if you're willing to dedicate yourself to meditation in the long term as part of life, I mean, I think of meditation as my best friend. It's a very cheap friend, but a friend nonetheless. And gradually over time, you find that the happiness, the peace, the well-being that you wanted, you can find from meditation. It's always really, really helpful to think about meditation in the most positive terms you can. It's evident sometimes just from somebody's body language, their relationship to meditation. Sometimes people can be very hunched up. And it gives you the sense that meditation is a burden, a trouble that they're trying to overcome. Whereas for me, meditation, like I say, is my best friend. It's something that I always look forward to. If I'm meditating in the morning, I think before I go to bed, really looking forward to meditating in the morning. If I'm meditating in the evening, I say to myself, really looking forward to meditating in the evening, creating this culture of mind which looks forward to, which delights in, even though it's challenging, even though it's a struggle, it's a struggle worth persisting with, and to look forward to it, to engage with that struggle, to delight in that struggle, really is the hallmark of a true meditator. It does change. Meditation does change. You do learn. And once you've established this ability to rest in the moment, watching the breathing process, aware that there are thoughts, but the thoughts are just whatever, they come and go, and you find that the concentration arises, the happiness arises, tranquility arises, the equanimity arises. It's such a beautiful place to be. And when you have that degree of control to be able to then turn it to the development of loving kindness, or turn it to the development of deep states of calm through just focusing on the breathing process, or what we teach here, turning the attention to focusing on observing the transient, unsatisfactory, and selfless nature of every component part of experience. That exploration of conscious experience, discovering things about existence you had never, ever considered before, seeing that it isn't what you thought it was, having your perception of life changed through this deep exploration into the true nature of reality. To my mind, it's the finest undertaking anyone can engage with. There is nothing greater. It exceeds concentration. I know that people want to get concentrated and have these cosmic expanded experiences, but samatha meditation is like a cul-de-sac the size of the universe. It's just a huge cul-de-sac. Eventually you have to come back out of it again. The exploration into transience, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self, the actual components that go to make up experience as it's occurring moment by moment, will transform your life in ways you could never have suspected. It transforms your understanding of life to be something you had never ever considered it to be before. And with it comes this comprehension of why it is that beings suffer, why it is that they passionately crave for life to be different than it is. You recognize the deep delusion that causes people to passionately want life to be different than it is. And because you see what the delusion is, you yourself have transcended it. And the problem is, it's so simple. It's not difficult at all until you try to put it into words. And the moment you try to put it into words, you're always making a mistake, you're always getting it wrong. But there is a knowing for the meditator who truly understands what that delusion is and has truly transcended it through understanding it. There is this recognition that there never was a problem. There never was anything out of place. Everything is exactly as it should be. There is this transcendent comprehension of the perfection that life truly is. That's why I love meditation. From that point on, though, a meditator can still develop their knowledge, still develop their understanding, still experience other aspects, other dimensions to experience, all through what? Sitting quietly in a chair with your eyes closed. All of that has been accomplished simply by sitting quietly with your eyes closed. That's what meditation has given me. I think it's the finest, like I say, I think it's the finest thing anyone could do with their lives. And I clearly didn't have my ending sorted out very well. Because I've just... But do you get kind of what I'm trying to put across there? Yeah, good. So, yeah, that's it. That's the end of the talk. Like I said, professional at all times. It is the finest thing, honestly. Just unbelievable. What I'm finding latterly is, I was talking with Alan this afternoon, and he came out with the phrase, an empty vessel is always the loudest thing. I can't remember what the expression actually is. It's something along those lines, isn't it? It's the empty vessel that makes the most noise. That's what it is. And what I'm finding latterly from meditation is that I don't want to make any noise. That resting content in the moment, the being part, is becoming deeper and deeper, and there is this sense in which there is nothing really that is out of place and nothing needs doing. There is this lovely sense of deep sense of perfection, and this wish to get more deeply and more deeply absorbed in that, which is problematic when you have to give a talk in the evening or have to go about your business. But so for me, it seems that there is no end to the discovery that's possible through meditation. And I'll do it for as long as I live. And it's the most uncanny thing when you consider that all you're doing is just resting in a chair with your eyes closed.